This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. In his professional life, he's been addressed as professor of sociology, counselor of law, mayor of Charlottesville, and delegate of the Virginia House. Now, he's taken on a new title, Mr. Leader. It is an historic role, although probably not in the way he'd prefer, for David Toscano has been selected to lead the House of Delegates' smallest minority of Democrats in modern times. So, what does he hope to accomplish? What realistically are his chances? And with a newly invigorated conservative majority in both houses of Virginia's General Assembly, is a train of change coming down the tracks that cannot be stopped? Virginia's newest minority leader is with us this hour to share his perspective. Yours is welcome, too. Our conversation begins right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Here are just some of the issues coming up before Virginia lawmakers next month. Money, or lack thereof, for local schools, guns, abortion, transportation, devolution, eliminating funding for the arts and public broadcasting, a potential personhood amendment to the Virginia Constitution, green energy, fracking, uranium mining. Got a question or perspective to share on any of those? Another issue of even more concern to you? Then please do call us at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Our guest is the newly selected minority leader for Democrats in Virginia's House of Delegates, and himself a delegate representing Charlottesville and parts of Albemarle County, David Toscano. Welcome back to Virginia Insight.
It's great to be here, and after hearing the list, I think we're going to do a 24-hour program now.
And who knows what other kinds of questions we're going to get from people listening. But David, I wanted to ask you that since you first got interested in politics many years ago, how much more crazy is elective office today than it was ever in your experience?
Oh, boy. It's so difficult to really tell you that because I've been in it so long that maybe I've lost perspective on how crazy it really is. You know, when you're on city council, you deal with all kinds of crazy issues related to cats and dogs and things that you just wouldn't believe that people want to talk about, but they're really important to them and you really need to address them. Now some of the craziness has to do with the partisanship and some of the things that people say on the House floor that you really can't believe they actually said. And I hope that I never get to the point where I say something where looking back over it, I wonder why I ever said that. But it is, you know, it's more partisan than it used to be. And I think, you know, one of my goals as a minority leader is to make sure that even though the distinctions between the Republicans and Democrats have to be drawn sharply, it doesn't mean that you have to do them in a sharp way. I mean, you can do them in a civil way. And the hope is that at the end of the day, people cast their votes, they make their decisions, and they move on to the next issue. Hopefully being able to at least be open to working together to try to solve problems together.
Take us a little bit through your career in politics. You actually ran the first time back in the early 80s as an independent for the U.S. House for Congress.
Oh, that was, yes, and that was a long time ago, and it was more along the lines of trying to sensitize people to issues related to environmental concerns. There was never any shot that I would ever win that race.
And you were still a professor of sociology back in those days.
Yeah, back in those days. Mm-hmm.
And then you became an attorney. You got a Ph.D., taught sociology at UVA for I don't know how many years, decided you wanted to become a lawyer, so you went back to school, got a doctorate of law. And it was the early 90s that you were first elected to Charlottesville City Council?
First elected to the Charlottesville City Council in 1990. I beat an incumbent who had been there for a while and very well loved in the community. It was kind of an upset win. And was on the council for 12 years and had a stint as the mayor in the mid-90s when the city faced a lot of really big economic problems. And we had to really work hard to get together with the business community to help grow the commercial sector in the city. And I think we did a pretty good job. I think the city's is really thriving right now.
And then elected to the House of Delegates in 2005?
Elected in November 2005, took office in 2006, so now I'm just completing my third term, my sixth year.
And Ward Armstrong, who was the Democratic minority leader in the House of Delegates for a significant number of years, basically got gerrymandered out of his district. No big surprise that he got crushed by his Republican opponent in the last election. Democrats needed a new leader in Richmond. How come you got the job? How come you wanted the job?
It is a great challenge. It's a great honor to be chosen. It's a great honor for our community here in Charlottesville, Albemarle. I don't know that there has been anybody in leadership on either side of the aisle. Oh, someone told me since the 1700s. So, from my part of the state. So, it's a great honor. In terms of how I got the job, I think people were saying after Ward got defeated, they were looking around and they kind of talking about, well, who would do the best job? And I guess my name continued to surface in the discussions. And eventually I sort of jumped in and nobody else wanted to compete with me. So I was either fortunate enough or unfortunate enough to get chosen.
People are not surprised to hear that a lawyer is in elected office. It isn't too often that you get somebody with a doctorate in sociology doing the kind of work that you're doing in the state capitol. Does that level of understanding of the human condition help in the General Assembly?
Oh, God only knows. I mean, ultimately it comes down to relationships. And as you well know, some academics are pretty good at building relationships between people and some aren't. So, and that's same with lawyers. Some lawyers are very grating and other people work in a collaborative fashion. You know, I've always tried to work in a collaborative fashion. You don't try to do too much of, quote, sociological analysis on the House floor, although sometimes you can speculate a little bit. Again, it's all about helping people, trying to change the world for the better, and trying to work with as many of your colleagues as you need to get the votes to enact the things that you believe are important to push for your constituents and for the Commonwealth.
What's going to be big in the session of the General Assembly that starts next month?
Well, you know, the first thing out of the box is going to be huge is the budget. I mean, the good news for Virginia is we continue to have our revenues increase. And those revenue projections are higher than they were projected last year. So that's good news. The problem is that they're not high enough. And at a time where you have incredible demands on the budget, and most notably in the area of K-12 education and in Medicaid, there are going to be real challenges to put together a budget that doesn't affect some part of state government that will have a real effect on people's lives. I'm not on the Appropriations Committee, but, you know, I do study the budget, and I'm more than well aware of the fact that something has got to give when not enough money runs up against that many needs. I have my own priorities. K-12 is a big priority. This year, we do what is called the re-benchmarking for the standards of quality. What that means is that we try to determine the costs involved in funding those basic standards that school divisions have come to expect and our constituents have. That is going to be probably close to another $1 billion that you need to find, and right now it's not there. So there's going to be real needs to set priorities.
Member of the Virginia House of Delegates from Charlottesville and Democratic minority leader now in that House, David Toscano, is our guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. If you want to talk to David, phone numbers 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. All of our lines are open at the moment. We are now getting some posts on our Facebook page. And you can find our Facebook page if you have a Facebook account by looking for WMRA's Virginia Insight. That's how we're listed. But let me say once again, as I often do when we get lots of posts, what it means when we get lots of Facebook posts is you hear my voice reading lots of other people's thoughts. And it's always nice to break that up some with some listeners' own voices so it doesn't get quite so boring. So if you're feeling just the slightest bit brave and you'd be willing to share your perspective or you have a question to ask, 888-WMRA-TALK. I promise to be kind and gentle. First post, David Toscano, comes from Ron, who says, David Toscano is a beacon of light and reason in a totally dark fantasy land we call the Virginia General Assembly. I guess, you know, this is somebody who would vote for you if he lived in your district.
Well, that makes me feel good. I wish that it wasn't the dark fantasy land that sometimes it appears to be when I'm down there. But, you know, you got to work on it. It is interesting sometimes. Again, people come from different districts. They have different folks informing them. And what I think is important, some people don't. You know, for example, climate change is a big issue for me. And yet a lot of my colleagues do not believe that climate change is caused even really in part by human activity.
Is there any geographic connection to that? I know that there's a political connection that pretty much at this point, all the Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives have made it clear that they don't believe climate change is either happening or if it is happening, that it's caused by any human activity. And it seems almost necessary to take that stance if you want to survive any potential Republican primary challenges, if you're an incumbent currently in the Republican Party. And there are a number of Virginia Republicans at a local and state level who say something similar. But then you look at places like the Virginia Beach and Norfolk area, and you see insurance companies are raising their rates for certain kinds of protective insurance because they believe that climate change is real, apparently, and that ocean levels are rising, that ocean temperatures are warming, that more hurricanes and other kinds of weather storms associated with climate change are coming. So what I'm curious about is, do you have even Republican lawmakers from Eastern Virginia concerned about climate change?
Well, if they are, they're really very quiet about it. I mean, the CIA has a group that is looking at climate change and trying to figure out what it means for national security. The military has a group that is concerned about climate change and considering what it means for national security. If you were to poll the scientists around the world or even in the United States, 90% plus believe that the science is good. It's sort of like when you have a son and you take your son to the doctor and you ask for a diagnosis and the doctor tells you something and you say, well, okay, I'm going to get a second opinion. And then you go down the street and you ask another doctor and he says the same thing. You still don't believe him. Then you go off to Duke Medical Center. You ask those people and they tell you the same thing and you still don't believe him. You keep asking and 97 out of 100 doctors tell you the same thing. Are you going to go with those 97 for your child? Or are you going to rely on the 3 that told you something different? I tend to go with the 97. So I believe in the scientific explanation for climate change. Then the question is, as a society, if in fact climate change is caused in part by human activity, what do we do about it? And that's where the policy issues come in. And that's where you have to balance a lot of different things, including the impacts on economic growth from certain regulations you might put in or certain policies you might adopt. They're two separate issues, but I embrace the science. I believe in evolution. I think that science is pretty established on that, and yet, you know, if you were to ask some of my colleagues in the General Assembly, they might not think that's the case.
Behind the scenes, David Toscano, I know that there are Republican members of the General Assembly that you like and that you respect and that you think of as intelligent. Are there such people on the GOP side who will say to you privately, yeah, I'm concerned about climate change, but I really, it's not politically viable for me to say that publicly?
Well, I think that is true on both sides. I mean, there are people who have to appeal to their bases on both sides, and they will tell the others that I really believe in your position on this, but I can't take it with you because I subject myself to a primary challenge. We got to break through that, and that's going to be based on relationships that get formed over time.
Democratic minority leader, newly selected as such in the Virginia House of Delegates, David Toscano is with us. Phone number 888-WMRA-TALK. Alex in Newmarket, You'll be our first call when we get back in just about 1 minute. David Toscano is an attorney from Charlottesville. He represents the 57th House of Delegates District, which includes the city of Charlottesville and portions of Albemarle County. He is now also the Virginia General Assembly's House Democratic Minority Leader. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Alex, thanks for calling us. Your question, your comment for Dr. Toscano, please.
For Dr. Toscano, as what is his position on fracking? I understand that there's a lot of pressure to frack in the western part of Virginia, and where I live in Shenandoah County, our basic industry is farming and tourism, which would not be improved by fracking.
I think that's a very good question, and Tom and I were talking about it before we went on the air. You know, this isn't an issue that has really been much on the radar screen in Virginia, but there have been a number of environmental folks who've expressed some concerns about this. If you were to talk to the gas and oil industries in the Commonwealth, they would say, well, this is a source of new fuel that can be generated domestically to help with our attempts to wean ourselves from foreign oil and foreign sources of energy. At the same time, though, it has to be done safely without degradation to the environment. And a lot of people are very worried about that. You know, I'm strongly supportive of scientific analysis on this. I'm not sure that the scientific community has reached consensus about the fracking issue. I've got enough concerns that I want to have more information, and I'd love it if you would send it to me at my davidtoscano.com mailing address so I can have some more information on it.
Alex, okay, does that respond to your question?
Well, part of my question, yes, but also this area is known for its underpinnings as karst, which is very porous, and, you know, they could drill somewhere and the water could go through caves and end up 100 miles somewhere else.
So, Alex, would you be willing to follow up Mr. Toscano's suggestion and send him further detail by email?
I don't have a lot of detail, but I'll see if I can get some.
Well, and I would appreciate that, and I know that that is the big issue, is whether the water supply would in some way be contaminated by the injection of this additional water and the breaking apart of, I guess, the fracks, shall we say, to free up the gas that's between the rocks.
Apparently it has not been successful in other areas where water has been contaminated, and I understand that the gas companies are not willing to divulge the chemicals that they pump in. It also uses a tremendous amount of water, which we're running out of.
And water is, of course, a challenge. In our area, water is a big issue.
Alex, thank you so much for bringing that issue up. Anybody else who wants to talk to the new minority leader for the Democrats in the Virginia House of Delegates, our lines are open at 888-967-2825. If you need a memory tool, it's 888-WMRA. Talk. Jim in Charlottesville, we'll get to you in just a second, but let's clarify, David, just what size minority you are in charge of.
You want to remind me of this, right? We have 32 Democrats out of 100 delegates now, so we've got a ways to go.
There are a couple of independents, but they vote with Republicans
they vote
like 99% of the time.
Yes, and they caucus with them.
So basically, you have 68 votes for Republicans in the House and 32 for Democrats. You represent a fairly liberal area in Charlottesville and portions of Albemarle County. Environmental concerns are high. If your constituents told you they were against fracking, you would not be surprised. But now that you are the minority leader for a caucus of Democrats from around the state, including some fairly conservative Democrats, would you be in a tough position if this became an issue?
You know, Tom, that is a great question. And, you know, I represent the constituents of the 57th, which is all the city of Charlottesville and part of Albemarle County. My district is very sensitive to environmental concerns, and I have to represent my district. At the same time, I have a special authority, a special responsibility to my caucus members to advance the caucus position, whatever it is. And so there might be times occasionally where I'll have to get up on the House floor and make an argument for a Democratic position that may not be as necessarily liberal as my district would be. The hope is that over time, there'll be some movement in the caucus towards positions that my constituents want, but I'm duty bound to represent the caucus, and I'm going to do that to the best of my ability.
Jim in Charlottesville, thanks for calling us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Minority Leader David Toscano, please.
Thank you for taking my call. So I think it's interesting that you spoke to scientific analysis with your previous caller. I have a medical problem which necessitates the fact that I unfortunately have to use Viagra. And in one of the most recent General Assembly sessions, the General Assembly voted to not allow the state health plan to pay for that medication any longer, considering it, I guess, quote-unquote, a recreational drug, when there's very good medical reasons for the use of it. And I want you to break down for me how such narrow-minded decisions can be made in the General Assembly and just totally not take into account that there's reasons why we have things such as this. And it just not is for medications, but all sorts of things.
I'm going to ask David to respond to your call and ask you if you could listen to his response off the air. We're getting some breakup in your cell
phone. Okay, I'll do that. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for the question. I can explain how this all went down. Viagra was in the health plan initially in the budget and then got stripped out because people found it was there and they didn't know it was there. And sometimes that's what happens with the budget. I think that there really wasn't much of a debate. I think the way the General Assembly viewed it is that it was recreational. Now, I'm not sure I'm aware of all of the medical reasons why people would have to take Viagra. It's very clear that the way it's being advertised, it's not usually for a medical purpose, but for a recreational purpose. And I think the politics of it was such that there was no way that it was going to be included in the drug plan supported by the Commonwealth's tax dollars.
With us now by phone is a Republican member of the House of Delegates, also a former teacher. In his 20th district, he represents the city of Stanton, the county of Highland, as well as parts of Augusta and Rockingham counties. Dickie Bell, thanks so much for making time for us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Is there anything that you and the Democrats, including David Toscano, are likely to agree upon in this upcoming state legislative session?
Oh, there must be something. I'm sure we'll find something. By the way, David, congratulations. I think
Thanks.
They made a fine choice for their leadership, and I look forward to working with you. I think there's common ground. What I hope most of all is that as Republicans, that we have learned how to manage a majority. We've got a track record of sometimes being better campaigners than those who govern, it seems to me like. And I don't want that to happen. I want us to not go in there and be cocky or arrogant about a 68-vote majority, because it really doesn't matter. You know, at the end of the day, we're all there to do the work of the folks of the Commonwealth. And I hope that we'll be able to put aside a lot of our differences and find common ground, because it's going to be a very interesting session, I think.
Dickie, it's good to hear from you. I always love being on the program with you, and maybe there'll be a time where you'll be here in the studio with me, but it's great to have you on the phone. Thanks for the very nice comments. You know, I'd like to find a way that we can work together on more things, too. I mean, we do. A lot of the issues get decided on 90 to 10 votes or 100 to 0 votes. So there are a number of things that people agree upon. I think that Delegate Bell points out very well that the big worry, I think, for Republicans in this session, especially in the House, is that they will overreach, that they will go too far to the right and therefore alienate independents that otherwise would be voting for them or actually have been voting for them over the last couple of cycles. At the same time, you can't control all your members so that, for example, Bob Marshall has introduced what's called the personhood bill, which is modeled after the bill that was just rejected by voters in Mississippi that essentially gives constitutional rights to a fetus and generates a whole host of potentially unintended consequences that people, I think most people in Virginia would not like. And that's House Bill 1. And so it's coming to a committee near you. And Dickie, I hope you don't get it because you're going to that's a hot one.
Let's ask. Dickie Bell is part of the Republican majority. When this proposal to amend the Virginia Constitution, the so-called personhood amendment, comes up, do you know how you vote on that? How you will vote on that?
No, I couldn't tell you right now. But I will tell you this. When we start, and I have suggested a constitutional amendment once before myself, but anytime you start suggesting amendments to the Constitution, you have to take that very seriously. We need to be very careful when we start doing things like that. I think the Constitution, generally speaking, is pretty darn good. And I think that before we make amendments to it, it needs to be something that is less in the area of a special interest than for something that's more for the greater good. That's my feeling. That's Dickie Bell's feeling. And I know that not everybody on my side of the aisle shares that. I do think that there's a chance there could be some overreaching, and I hope not. That's not me, and that's not my style. I'm conservative socially, certainly, and I'm conservative fiscally. But I do think that one of the things we have sort of forgotten how to do, it's kind of a lost art, and that is the art of compromise. And I catch some flack from some of my conservative colleagues and constituents sometimes because I'm willing to compromise on some things. And I just think that if you look at our history, if you look at the good government we've had in Virginia for nearly 400 years, and in this country, most of the really good legislation we've ever had is a result of compromise. No matter how far apart we were at the beginning, we were able to come together and find some good things out of either side and put together some really great legislation. And I still think that's the best government. I think that's when government is working the way it's supposed to. And that's what I'm hoping for. I hope we can make that happen.
And I agree. And, you know,
is there any kind of legislation that the two of you would like to co-sponsor?
Well, something that would have to do with education funding. I know that's Delegate Bell's background. And, you know, I'd like to think that given his experience with education, he wants to make sure that the dollars are properly spent, but he wants to also make sure that the dollars are properly there. And there is a risk that they won't be there. And so I'm hoping that folks like him can join with folks like me to make sure that the funding is adequate for education.
Delegate Bell, we promised your staff that we would not keep you on the phone too long. I know that you're just driving back from an event in Highland County, but I sure do appreciate you making time to speak with us for a few minutes.
Well, Tom, I'm delighted to be with you. I always enjoy being with David. I have nothing but the utmost respect for him, and I hope that we can find some things to work together on.
20th District House of Delegates member, Republican from Stanton, Dickie Bell, thanks so much. This is Virginia Insight. Call-in phone number if you want to join the conversation with the new Democratic minority leader in the House of Delegates, David Toscano. Phone number is 888-WMRA-TALK. Mary in Nelson County, thanks for using that number and calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Yeah, well, I'm calling. It's great to hear you on the phone, Mr. Toscano. I live down in Nelson County, Virginia, and us in Nelson County and probably lots of different pockets of liberal and Democratic voters around the state really suffered in this last election because we were gerrymandered out of having a majority vote. And so as a result, you have a smaller group, but also as a result, we don't have a voice and or feel like we're not going to have a voice. And then, while it was a relief to hear Dickie Bell, who got a piece of our district in Nelson County this year for the first time, speak so eloquently about compromise, I think there are a lot of us who are really worried that we're going to suffer and hope that you'll remember us even though we didn't vote for you.
Yes. Oh, thank you for the nice comments. And I will, every time I push the button down there, I'm not thinking just about my constituents, and I have to think about them, but I also am thinking about folks in the Commonwealth of Virginia across the board. And that includes people in my region like you in Nelson County, not that far away from me, people in Greene, Madison. You know, I don't technically represent them, but we are a Commonwealth. We rise and fall together. Sometimes we get a little too parochial down the General Assembly, and we have to break through that and look at the broader interests. So I hope that I can be a voice for folks like you. You had a great candidate down there in the 58th District who was unfortunately defeated, partly because of the way the redistricting drew the lines to make it a much more Republican district. And I think that's the reason why the Democrats are now at a low point in terms of representation. The gerrymandering process set up all of these districts where it was very hard to compete, and it's going to take some time to get our numbers back, but we will, because I think we have a message to talk about.
Mary, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
Former professor of sociology, former mayor of Charlottesville, current attorney in private practice, and the new minority leader for Democrats in the Virginia House of Delegates, David Toscano, is our guest. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. If you have an idea what you would like Virginia state lawmakers to accomplish when they begin their newest session next January, or what you'd like to make sure they don't try to accomplish, we'd be happy to hear your thoughts at 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And this comes from Gary on Facebook, who says, quote, "If you want to carry a gun in a public place, you should have to go through a shoot, don't shoot course and have insurance. This does not keep you from owning guns, nor does it make it harder to acquire guns. It just helps to protect the general, peaceful, and innocent population at large from people who carry guns for self-protection, who have never been in a shootout, and who are more likely to kill or injure an innocent bystander than the bad guy. This requirement would be an example of what a law-abiding, responsible, patriotic citizen should do to not only protect himself, but others."
That's an interesting shoot, don't shoot. I've never heard of that. You know, I did some firearm training and been qualified to carry a concealed weapon if I want to. And I didn't get trained on shoot, don't shoot. I got trained on how to shoot and hit a target. But I also realize it's not the kind of thing that you, you know, you have to continue to improve on your skills. And that may be something that's worth doing. I think that the big issue that's going to come in the General Assembly this time is extending greater rights, gun rights to people, not trying to make it more difficult for them to get concealed weapons. So we can talk about that after the break if you want.
Okay. You could hear the music.
I can hear the music.
So we will get some specifics about the many gun rights bills that passed the House last year that now do stand a better chance that the Republicans will also be in control of the state Senate. I also want to ask you, David, about a new study out of George Mason University talking about the number of job losses Virginia could be facing because of what's going on in Washington.
I guess the music goes on a while.
You want to say a bit more about guns?
Sure.
Music's over now. So.
Oh, so I can. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think you're going to see an effort to repeal the one handgun a month rule that was passed during the Wilder years. I think you're going to see an effort to make concealed permit reciprocity come into effect, i.e. if you get a gun in some other place, if you get permission to carry concealed in some other place, you can also carry in Virginia.
Is that a bad thing?
I think so, because I think we should have our own rules in Virginia for carrying concealed. And I think we have training set up for folks to carry concealed. And why should we bow down to what Arizona might like, or Idaho, or something where it's a totally different environment.
There are some states where you do not need a permit to carry concealed, and there's been some talk among some Republicans of having that standard here in Virginia. Is that likely to get through?
I haven't seen the bill yet, but you can't predict what any individual may introduce, and you can't predict where it's going to go. But you can predict that this is a different environment than existed 2 years ago. Most gun
describe
bills,
a little bit about
it's
that.
It's much more conservative, much more conservative in both houses. The House of Delegates has been a conservative body since I got there. When I first got to Richmond, the Senate was controlled by Republicans, but it was controlled by a moderate Republican group. And that group is now gone. And now the 20 members of the Republican caucus in the Senate are, for the most part, pretty conservative. So
now, for the first time, we have more Republicans in the House than ever. We have a Senate that is, for all intents and purposes, has a Republican majority. It's a 20-20 split out of the 40 members, but the Republican lieutenant governor will cast the tie-breaking vote.
Yes.
And unlike what you were talking about a few minutes ago, when you first got to Richmond, we have a Republican governor.
Right.
The other check, as part of the balance between the legislative process and the state house before, was that Tim Kaine could veto things he didn't like coming out of the legislature, being a Democrat. Now Republicans pretty much own it all, and you're saying that that's not only true, but they tend to be much more conservative Republicans
right.
than in the past?
Yes, in the Senate, they're much more conservative now than they were before. It used to be that a number of pretty bad bills coming out of the House of Delegates, at least in my view, were then killed by Republicans in the Senate. That isn't going to happen anymore. And what's going to be very interesting is to watch Lieutenant Governor Bowling, when he gets all of these very socially conservative legislation, where he has to break the tie one way or the other. And given that he's running for governor against a very conservative attorney general, what is he going to do? Does he go to the right and try to placate the conservative base of the party by voting for all these socially conservative pieces of legislation? Or does he try to outflank Attorney General Cuccinelli from the middle and potentially vote down something that will alienate his base? It's going to be a fascinating thing to watch in the Senate.
So is part of what you're saying is the fact that Ken Cuccinelli just announced a couple of days ago that he is going to be running for governor, challenging Bill Bowling, who many thought was next in line, that this might cause Mr. Bowling to be even more conservative, to kind of outflank Mr. Cuccinelli?
It's possible. We're going to see what happens when the first piece of very conservative legislation gets to the tie vote. Lieutenant Governor Bowling, how will he vote? It'll be interesting to watch.
Member of the Virginia House of Delegates from Charlottesville and Democratic Minority Leader in that House, David Toscano, is our guest. Another call coming in from Nelson County. Connie, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Well, hey, David, this is Connie Brennan from Nelson
Connie,
County.
Hey, Connie, how you doing? Hey,
I'm
Connie,
doing
how
great.
Are you?
You were just saying nice things about her. She was the candidate you were talking about who lost and.
I didn't even ask her to call in.
No. Well, I was just reading in the Whipple Report an article, and of course I can't remember where it actually originated, but the writer was suggesting that this is a very good time to have another look again at nonpartisan redistricting, since there won't be any Virginia elections for another 2 years. And I just wondered if you thought that that was even a remote possibility.
Well, Connie, I think it's a great time to relook at nonpartisan redistricting because those people who'll be making decisions on whether to support it or not are most likely not going to be in the General Assembly 10 years from now. At least they won't necessarily see themselves there. And so there's not another redistricting for 10 years. It's a great idea. I'm sure that members of my caucus are going to introduce legislation. I'm going to be on that legislation. You know, that being said, I think the chances of her passing, again, are pretty small. It's gotten out of the Senate before, but it hasn't gotten anywhere in the House. And we can see what's happening. I mean, what's happening is all these districts are being gerrymandered such that they become safe districts for incumbents. And when that happens, there's more polarization within the elected bodies themselves and greater difficulty in getting people to compromise to get things done. You're seeing it in Washington, and now you're seeing it in many of the state houses around the country. So I'm with you.
Yeah. Well, I just want to also thank you so much for your dedication to the people of the Commonwealth, your wonderful good sense and sense of humor, and I wish you the greatest of success in the years to come. And I'm right behind you.
Thank you so much. It means a lot.
Connie Brennan, thank you so much. Connie is actually a former guest on Virginia Insight when we had a show talking about liberals and conservatives talking to each other, who were graduates of the Sorenson Institute, and Connie is a member of the Nelson County Board of Supervisors.
Former chair.
And
former chair now, maybe.
Defeated recently in her attempt to become a member of the House of Delegates. Connie, thanks so much for calling in.
My pleasure. Thank you.
888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. If you get your call in the next couple of minutes, we probably can get it on the air. If you'd like to talk with the new Democratic minority leader in the House of Delegates, David Toscano. Talk to me, David, if you would, about what's going to happen to Virginia's economy now that Washington's super committee has failed and automatic federal budget cuts go into effect.
You know, that's a great question, and a lot of people in the listening audience don't realize the impact of the flame out of the super committee, because if the cuts come through the way they're supposed to come through, there will be a huge impact on Virginia, particularly in the area of federal spending and in defense spending. For those of you who don't know, Virginia is first in DOD, Department of Defense spending. We get more dollars than any other state.
Something like 900,000 jobs in Virginia from defense spending.
A lot of them. And we are second in terms of overall federal spending. So we get, of all the states, we are second in terms of the dollars that come from Washington to Virginia. And we are first in federal procurement dollars. These are dollars that come, that go to private companies to pay private employees to do something to help the government. So when you talk about these cuts, huge impact on Virginia, potentially 123,000 jobs. And so when you think about this as a Virginia politician, a Virginia elected official, how could you ever be in favor of extending the Bush tax cuts? Because that is money that could otherwise be coming into the state of Virginia to make jobs, to help local economies. And if you live downstate or in the valley, to help fuel Northern Virginia and their tax revenue that flows into the state and then goes south to help with the school funding in rural areas to the south. So, you know, when we talk about, federal spending and job creation, we got to be really careful, because this is real money creating real jobs for Virginia, and it helps real people throughout the Commonwealth.
That figure you just used, David, 123,000 jobs lost from the federal cuts that are now scheduled to automatically go into effect with the super committee's failure. I think that's from the recent George Mason University study. And that particular professor, I think, was talking just about direct job cuts, people whose jobs currently are either as a federal contractor or as a federal government employee. It does not measure the ripple effect of those kind of cuts. Talk to us about the potential ripple effect.
Well, in economics, they talk about the multiplier effect. That is, a dollar spent is multiplied as it goes through the economy. Same thing with a job created. It generates more jobs because people have money to spend, and therefore more and more people get hired to take the money that folks want to spend. And so there could be impacts beyond 123,000 jobs if people don't have money in their pockets to spend in the local economies. There could be impacts in terms of state revenue that would otherwise go to fund everything from roads to public safety to education. And I think folks are not really thinking about the implications of letting these cuts go into effect on Virginia. And they could have some pretty dramatic implications.
Next call is coming from near Massanutten, we understand. Donna, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment for Delegate and Minority Leader David Toscano, please.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm really concerned, I'm desperately concerned about the situation for families with children with autism and people with autism in Virginia. The Assembly passed the autism insurance bill this spring, and it took more than 10 years to get this democratic process to work, and now it's kind of disappeared into committee, and it passed, but because the board-certified folks aren't going to be licensed, it means that the key part of what helps you with autism won't work. And I was just wondering, is there anything anyone can do to get this to actually go into effect?
And David, clarify a little bit for us about what's happening with this, if you will.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I just asked Donna, if you'll hold on, I asked David to clarify what's going on with the legislation.
Okay.
Donna is right. For a number of years, there are members of the General Assembly that try to write in a requirement that autism spectrum disorders be covered under certain insurance policies. And after a long, long struggle, there was a very limited bill passed last year. What was interesting about that is when that bill went to the governor, he inserted some language which a lot of us thought would be the poison pill for that legislation, and that is that certain things had to be certified in order for the bill to take effect. And, of course, in the last week or so, we find out that those certifications have not been accomplished, and therefore that insurance benefit will not be available to people in the same way that we thought it would be. That was a gubernatorial action. We were concerned that that would gut the bill. In fact, that's what really has happened. And I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see some legislation in this session to try to restore it to its original language so that some level of assistance can be provided. And it was really quite modest.
And there were some Republicans, including Jill Vogel from the Winchester area, fairly conservative Republican, who was an ardent supporter of that legislation. So it's possible that you will get passage of a revised bill?
Well, I think it is possible. I remember Bob Marshall, a very conservative member of the House of Delegates, was one who put forward that bill. A friend of mine, Delegate Poisson out of Loudoun, who's no longer there, had advanced that bill in years past. He was a Democrat. So you cannot necessarily predict how people will vote on this bill based on their party.
Donna, thank you so much for bringing up that issue.
Thank you.
We have time for this one Facebook post, I think, even though it's a little bit long. Let me read parts of it. This is from Matt, who says, "The worst thing that can happen to Republicans is that they win elections and then have to govern. I predict Virginians will become disgusted by the lack of government services and poor budget control that the GOP government provides, and hence a major backlash in 2012 and 2013. What Democrats have to do is filibuster everything." That sounds like somebody who may be a Democrat already, David Toscano, on your side, but may not understand that in the state legislature, you don't have a filibuster. Yeah.
Well, we definitely don't have one in the House of Delegates. But it is true that we have got to draw the distinctions pretty clearly. We have to do it in a nice way, but make it clear. We have to say no, but it's not just enough for me and for us to say no. We need to provide some answers so that people know. We know what we're talking about. We are in a position where we can govern. And if you give us a chance, we'll show you what we can do. And that's my challenge.
We're just about out of time, David, but this was listed on our Facebook page. And I want to make sure people don't think we misspelled something else. So would you please explain devolution to us?
Devolution is a concept whereby the State Department of Transportation would transfer all of its operations and maintenance responsibility and construction responsibility for building and maintaining roads to local jurisdictions, local counties. Think about that. If you live in a small...
There are many Republicans in the General Assembly who are talking about doing just this thing.
Yes, and think about it. It's not just a question of funding your maintenance budget, but you also have to build up your fleet to provide the trucks to plow the snow, to provide whatever you need to do to pave the roads or contract with a private employer to pave the roads. And there's probably, you know, and here's always the hook, there won't be enough money that comes with it to make it happen. So And we have not seen this yet. So we'll see what happens if the governor proposes it. There's rumors that he will do that, but we don't know yet.
Last session of the House overwhelmingly, the Republican majority, voted to eliminate all state funding for the arts and for public broadcasting. The governor has said he wants all public funding of broadcasting, public broadcasting, to be eliminated. Now that the Republicans have a larger majority than ever in the House and they control the Senate, is it pretty much assured that any state funding for public broadcasting and the arts is going away?
This is a public process, a democratic process, so you never can say for sure that it's over until, as they say, the fat lady sings. And I think that if folks want to have that money in the budget, they need to speak loudly and clearly to their elected representatives. People
repeat
listen
your,
to you.
Repeat your email address again, if you would, please, David.
It's www.davidtoscano.com. That's the website, and that's how you can get to me.
DavidToscano.com. Our guest has been 57th District House of Delegates member representing Charlottesville and part of Albemarle, as well as now Democratic Minority Leader David Toscano. David, thanks so much.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Virginia Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Our associate producers are Bob Levicky and Terry Ward. We had extra help today from Sarah McConnell, Elliot Majerzik, Tony Field, and Andrew Windham at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jospe and Inner Rhythm. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Insight Archives. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight. That's okay. Just put your headphones back on for just a second.